Move to questions without notice and give the call to the Honourable the Leader of the Opposition.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. My question is to the Minister for Immigration. The Albanese government has released 149 hardcore criminals from immigration detention, including 7 murderers, 37 sex offenders and 72 other violent offenders, putting Australians at risk. At a time when Australian families are living through a cost of living crisis and struggling to make ends meet, can the Minister confirm the hardcore criminals he's released, including rapists and murderers, have now received over $3 million in free accommodation and welfare payments?
Order. The Minister for Home Affairs will cease interjecting. Give the call, so will the Deputy Leader of the Opposition. And give the call. The Minister for Home Affairs, I just said, will cease interjecting. That means cease interjecting. Give the call to the Minister for Immigration, Citizenship and Multicultural Affairs.
Thank you, Speaker, and I thank the Leader of the Opposition for his question, although I remind him and all members that it was a decision of the High Court that required this government and indeed any government to release the detainees in question. And I remind him as well that the arrangements in place for the support for people who are released from immigration detention are the same as they were when he was the minister responsible.
Good answer.
The call to the order. Give the call to the honourable member for Lingiari.
Thank you, Speaker. My question is.
Order.
My question
the
is
member
to
for Lingiari will begin her question again. She shall be heard in silence.
Thank you, Speaker. My question is to the Minister for Indigenous Australians. What is the Albanese Labor government doing to create jobs in remote communities and build a better future for Indigenous Australians?
I give the call to the Minister for Indigenous Australians.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And can I thank the member for Lingiari, who knows very well the importance of this announcement by the Prime Minister today. The new Remote Jobs and Economic Development Program we've announced today to also recognise the 16th anniversary of the Closing the Gap. This part of our response means that communities will have a say over their future and the economic development that they believe they need. It is a $707 million investment and the first step in our commitment to replace the failed community development program. The new program will be grounded in self-determination. Communities will decide what jobs are created across various sectors like aged care, childcare, hospitality, tourism, horticulture and town maintenance. A $185 million Community Jobs and Business Fund will be set up for local and community-owned businesses to apply for money for equipment and capital. For too long, people in remote communities have missed out on the dignity of the benefits of work. When I visit remote communities, which is often, fixing the mess left by the Liberals and the failed community development program is absolutely the number one issue raised with me. This is about creating a better future for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islanders, Australians in remote communities. I am so pleased, and the member for Grey should listen to this one, that in the remote South Australian community of Cunibba, we are seeing people sign up to the trial of our new program. Peter Hurrell was employed yesterday.
The member for Grey.
Was employed yesterday. He will be learning new skills and putting those skills to work in our his community. The Productivity Commission's first review on progress in terms of the national agreement has demonstrated that all governments need to do better. I am so, so pleased the Prime Minister made this announcement today. It will be a recognition of the peaks and also a recognition of the importance of jobs and economic development in Aboriginal remote communities.
The call to the honourable member for Wannan.
Thanks, Speaker. My question is to the Minister for Immigration. On 13 November, in between releasing criminals, the Minister told the House that he had, and I quote, issued visas to impacted individuals with appropriate conditions to ensure that community safety can be upheld, end quote. Last night, the Department of Home Affairs revealed it had always advised these conditions would be unenforceable. Asked why, they said, I think you would have to ask the ministers for an explanation. Can the minister please explain why he misled the House?
Order. Order. The Minister for Climate Change and Energy. The Leader of the House.
Mr Speaker, notwithstanding the questionable nature of the start of the question, by trying to turn it into a speech, the speaking time elapsed before a question had been asked.
Order. I'll hear from the manager.
Mr Speaker, it was perfectly clear what the question was. You allow plenty of latitude. You allow plenty of latitude on the speaking times from the government, so it's appropriate that there be a bipartisan approach.
I'll deal with this matter. I'm going to allow the question. I did hear the question, but this is the position going forward. I don't want anyone calling out time again on both sides. It happens all the time. There's got to be some discretion allowed by the chair. If people want the exact timing enforced, it will happen. But I'm just going to remind all opposition questions and the crossbench to respect the time limits and ministers as well. Give the call to the Minister for Immigration, Citizenship and Multicultural Affairs.
Thanks, Speaker. I thank the Shadow Minister for the question. I remind him too that the release of detainees was required by the decision of the High Court in November. Was required. And in response to that, we took a range of steps to ensure the Australian community was kept safe, including immediately setting up Operation Aegis. So we saw the coordination of the ABF, the AFP and state and territory law enforcement authorities. We put in place stringent visa conditions and we moved to change the law to criminalise breaches of those visa conditions as part of the four layers of protection we now have in place. Stringent visa conditions, electronic monitoring and curfews, community safety orders.
Order. The minister will pause. The minister was talking about the conditions about the question, so I'm going to listen to the manager of the member for Wannan.
Advise that those conditions.
Resume your seat. The member for Wannan, as is commonly used in this House, is a serial offender when it comes to order, when it comes to coming to the dispatch box and just speaking. He's been here for a very long time. This is the last time. 14 years, I'm advised by the member for Riverina. Order. Everyone's helping today, but I'm just going to remind the member. Order. Members on my right. The member for Wannan. This is the last time. You simply can't get to the dispatch box and start speaking. You will get the call. Just state the point of order. Silence is going to continue so I can hear the minister.
Thanks, Speaker. As I was saying, we've put in place four layers of protection. We've also set up the Community Protection Board to advise government on the appropriate measures to manage this cohort that we were required to release into the community. We've also done something that the former government did not do, and that is made a real investment in immigration compliance. $250 million, in sharp contrast to decisions taken by the Leader of the Opposition, who halved the compliance function.
We call to the honourable member for Macquarie.
Thank you, Speaker. My question is to the Prime Minister. How will the Albanese Labor government's new tax cuts take pressure off Australians, and what obstacles has the government overcome in delivering this relief?
Give a call to the Prime Minister.
Thanks, Mr Speaker. And I thank the member from Macquarie for her question. And she knows that on 1 July, as a result of Labor's cost of living tax cuts, every Australian taxpayer will get a tax cut. Not just some, all 13.6 million of them, because we support the aspirations of all Australians, not just some. Our tax cuts will ensure that 84% of Australians get a bigger tax cut than they were going to get before our intervention. Our number one priority is easing cost of living without adding to inflation. That's the key. Getting costs down for families, getting wages up for workers, and getting the budget, of course, onto a stronger foundation, with the first budget surplus in 15 years delivered by this Treasurer. The first in 15 years. Now, whereas we want people to earn more and keep more of what they earn, those opposite want people to work longer for less. That is the great divide in Australian politics that we're seeing played out. Our tax cuts come on the top of other measures: cheaper medicines, affordable housing, energy bill relief, higher wages, cheaper childcare, historic investment in Medicare. That is the action that we are taking.
Casey will cease to
those opposite have said no to every action this government has taken on cost of living. And they've even stopped asking questions in this place. They never talk about cost of living. When we announced our tax cuts, their gut reaction was to oppose it, and then they said they'd roll it back. They'd roll it back because it just didn't cross their mind to look after people who were earning under $45,000 a year, to give them a tax cut. It didn't cross their mind that maybe average workers deserve double the tax cut, which is what we're delivering for them. And we were reminded of what their focus has been last night in the third episode of Nemesis. The third episode of Nemesis, where Huey and Dewey down there featured quite prominently.
Order.
And here's Louis.
Order. The Prime Minister will pause. The Member for Riverina and the Member for Gippsland. Order. Honestly, the Member for Riverina and Gippsland will just cease interjecting so I can hear from the Manager of Opposition Business.
Mr Speaker, on relevance, the question was commendably tightly drafted and it did not go anywhere near the territory that once again the Prime Minister seems to be wanting to divert into.
There was no reference to television shows in the question, but the Prime Minister was asked about obstacles. Just going to ask him to make sure his answer is relevant, to include any material regarding to obstacles.
Mr Speaker, and the obstacle is an opposition that's obsessed by each other. The Manager of Opposition Business just moved a point of order saying he didn't want to talk about it. None of them were shy last night. They were not shy. They were queuing up at the ABC studios. They were there in Harris Street, day after day, week after week. It was a sit-in, Mr Speaker, to get their noggins on the TV as part of that show, to demonstrate how much they hated each other. Mr Speaker, the Australian people didn't rate a mention last night. No discussion
Order.
Of policy,
Prime
no
Minister's time
discussion
has
of people,
concluded.
Just all about themselves.
Before I call the Member for North Sydney, just a couple of quick acknowledgements. I'd like to inform the House that present in the gallery today is Councillor Jamie Chaffee, the Mayor of Gunnedah and President of the New South Wales Country Mayors, as guests of the Members for Park, and the Member for Coogee from the New South Wales Parliament, Marjorie O'Neill. Welcome to you all. And I give the call to the Honourable Member for North Sydney.
Thank you, Mr Speaker. My question is to the Treasurer. Last financial year, Origin Energy reported a net profit of more than $1 billion, listing elevated commodity prices as a contributing factor. In the middle of a cost of living crisis, will the government consider taxing windfall profits to fund cost of living measures in the May budget?
Give the call to the Treasurer.
Thank you, Mr Speaker, and thanks to the Member for North Sydney for her question. As the Home Affairs Minister rightly points out, at last someone over in that direction who cares about the cost of living. Mr Speaker, in the most recent budget.
Order, order. Members on my left, Members on my left will cease interjecting. The member for Barker will cease interjecting as well. The Treasurer has the call.
Thanks very much, Mr. Speaker, and thanks again to the member for North Sydney. In the last budget, one of the key initiatives was to get a bigger return sooner from the offshore gas industry when it comes to taxation. And that is partly because, as the honourable member rightly identifies in her question, we need to make sure that we can fund the quite substantial cost of living relief that we have provided in our first two budgets, that we are providing when it comes to our cost of living tax cuts for Middle Australia. And obviously in future budgets, we will look to provide additional cost of living help where that's affordable and responsible and necessary and effective. And so the principle that is in the member for North Sydney's question is a principle that we have adopted. Trying to raise a bit more tax out of the industry that she identifies in order to fund some of our priorities. And because of that, because of our responsible economic management, whether it's sensible changes to resource taxation, whether it's our changes to multinational tax, whether it is our changes to high balance superannuation accounts, whether it's our efforts on compliance in a whole range of areas, in addition to the $50 billion of savings that we found in two budgets, compared with the $0 in savings in their last budget. We have managed to get the budget in much better nick at the same time as we do roll out that substantial cost of living help, strengthening Medicare, building a future made in Australia, easing the pressure on families and pensioners and young people in communities like yours and indeed right around Australia.
The call to the honourable member for Fremantle.
Thank you, Speaker. My question is to the Minister for the Environment and Water. How will Australian workers on the front line of environmental protection benefit from Labor's cost of living tax cuts?
Give a call to the Minister for the Environment and Water.
Thanks so much, Mr. Speaker, and thanks to the member for Fremantle for his question. I know that he is one of the most committed and effective environmental enthusiasts we have in this place, and he is also absolutely all over the cost of living challenges that his voters face. In fact, he's got 85,000 constituents who'll receive a tax cut from the Albanese Labor government's plan, an average of $1,761 more in their pockets each year because of the changes we are proposing. Because we are all about making sure that Australians earn more and keep more of what they earn, whereas those opposite are all about people working longer for less. Mr. Speaker, I know that people who work on the front line of environmental protection, they don't do it for the money.
Order.
They do it for love. They love nature. They want to protect and restore our natural environment. But when you look at the sort of challenges they face, when we came in, the Australian Institute of Marine Science, doing great science, falling apart, facing 100 job Order. Losses, leaky roofs, laboratories they couldn't use, we doubled their funding, and now we want to better look after their scientists. You've got a PhD going in there to do vital work on crown of thorns starfish or coral spawning. Someone on $90,000 a year, they will keep $1,929 more each year of what they earn. Look at the Indigenous rangers that do such marvellous work around our country. I met Indigenous rangers at Uluru Katajuta National Park or the Katiti Pediman Indigenous Protected Area, doing wonderful work looking after the great desert skink in the Marla enclosure, where they're breeding up Marlas to release back into the wild, doing burning, cultural burning, to make sure that those massive wildfires don't break out in central Australia. An Indigenous ranger on $77,000 a year will keep $1,604 more of their pay every year because of the proposals that we're making. That's not just important for that individual and their family. Those rangers working in remote communities across Australia are spending their pay in local businesses, creating work for others in their community. We are all about backing our scientists, backing our Indigenous rangers, backing our ecologists, because we will always stand for higher wages, Australians keeping more of what they earn, opposed to those opposite who want to see Australians work longer for less.
The call to the Honourable the Deputy Leader of the Opposition.
My question is to the Minister for Immigration. In Senate estimates last night, it was confirmed that the Minister, not the Community Protection Board, is the final decision maker in relation to the conditions placed on the 149 former detainees. Given this, can the Minister now tell the Australian people how many of the 7 murderers and 37 sex offenders released into the community by the Albanese government are not wearing ankle bracelets?
Give a call to the Minister for Immigration, Citizenship and Multicultural Affairs.
Thank you, Speaker, and I thank the Deputy Leader of the Opposition for her question. Yesterday in Senate estimates we saw a wide body of evidence which demonstrated that in response to
the Member for Casey, just pause a second. The Member for Casey has been continuously interjecting all week. He's going to stop interjecting and start showing some respect to members in this House. The Minister will be heard in silence.
Thank you, Speaker. As I was saying, what we heard in Senate estimates was a detail of the relentless effort that has been made by the government since November last year to maintain the safety of the Australian community. Hey, hey, and a critical part of that was, of course, the establishment of the Community Safety Board, a body composed of eminent law enforcement and other professionals to provide us with expert advice on how to manage this cohort in the community. I greatly valued their advice and, of course, the input of the ABF Commissioner. And indeed, I've acted in accordance with their advice in every decision that I have made.
The call to the Honourable Member for Moreton.
Thank you, Speaker. My question is to the Treasurer. How do the Labor government's efforts to ease cost of living pressures fit into its broader economic strategy? What progress is being made and what obstacles are being overcome?
Give the call to the Treasurer.
Thanks, Speaker. I thank the wonderful member for Moreton for his question, for the way that he represents the southern suburbs of Brisbane and for helping to ensure that every Australian taxpayer gets a tax cut on the 1st of July. And his community means 85% of taxpayers will get a bigger tax cut to help with the cost of living, Mr. Speaker. And this is a really important part of our broader economic strategy, to ease the pressure on Australians, to invest in our people and their future, and to get the budget in better nick. And our strategy has been endorsed just today, Mr. Speaker, with 2 new releases. Standard & Poor's reaffirmed our AAA credit rating, praising our strong budget outcomes and endorsing the government's budget strategy. And Westpac Melbourne Institute consumer sentiment lifted to a 20-month high, and they say it's partly because of our tax plan for middle Australia, Mr. Speaker. Now, there's no shortage of challenges in our economy and in the global economy, but we are making welcome and encouraging progress. When we came to office, real wages were going backwards by 3.4%. Quarterly inflation was more than 3 times what it is now. There were huge deficits, and there was nowhere near enough to show for $1 trillion in Liberal debt. And now, Mr. Speaker, inflation is moderating. Real wages have grown for 2 consecutive quarters. Tax cuts will flow to every taxpayer from the 1st of July. We've delivered the first surplus in 15 years, which is helping us clean up the mess that we inherited from those opposite. Now, we know it's not mission accomplished, Mr. Speaker, when it comes to inflation or the economy or the budget, and we know that people are still under the pump. And that's why easing cost of living pressures are this government's highest priority. That's why these tax cuts come on the top of rent assistance, electricity bill relief, cheaper childcare, cheaper medicines and more. And it's why we are focused on boosting take-home pay. And it's here, as the Prime Minister said, Mr. Speaker, that the defining difference between those opposite and this government is the clearest. This Albanese Labor government is working to ensure that more Australians earn more and that they keep more of what they earn. Whereas that opposition, Mr. Speaker, wants people to work longer and for less. It was clear last night, Mr. Speaker, in the documentary that ordinary working people didn't get a look in for the best part of a decade of dysfunction and division and disarray. And now the leftovers from that period have abandoned middle Australia in opposition, just like they abandoned them in government. They don't even pretend to care about the cost of living anymore, Mr. Speaker. If they cared about the cost of living, they wouldn't have voted against electricity bill relief. If they cared about the cost of living, they wouldn't have said they'll unwind our tax cuts for middle Australia. And if they cared about the cost of living, Mr. Speaker, they'd actually ask a question about it.
I'll just go to the member for Wide Bay, who has the call.
Thank you, Speaker. My question is to the Minister for Immigration. Can the Minister inform the House if the whereabouts of any of the 149 criminals is unknown?
Give a call to the Minister for Immigration, Citizenship and Multicultural Affairs.
Thank you, Speaker. I thank the member for Wide Bay for this question. One of the first things that we did in response to the High Court's decision was to set up Operation Aegis to ensure that our agencies and state and territory law enforcement agencies have the capacity to share information so that they can work across the country to keep the Australian community safe. And I acknowledge his very distinguished service in law enforcement in the past. And through this...
The Deputy Leader of the Opposition will cease interjecting. The Minister is going to be heard in silence. I want to hear his answer.
Thank you very much, Speaker. I've talked repeatedly about the four layers of protection that we have put in place to keep the community safe. And can I be very clear in saying that every individual is subject...
Minister will pause. A Leader of the Opposition on a point of order.
Mr. Speaker, the question was very tight. It asked the Minister whether or not one
order. I'll hear from the Leader of the Opposition on the point of order.
Well, on relevance, Mr. Speaker, the Minister was asked a very tight question. Does he know where the 149 are or not? As simple as that, can he answer the question?
The Minister was asked a pretty short, tight question. I'm just going to make sure the answer that he's giving to the House contains the information or as much information as he may be able to provide the House regarding that matter and to make sure he's directly relevant.
Thank you, Speaker. As I was saying just a moment ago, each individual in the cohort is subject to at least one of the four layers of protection. And that means that each one of them, that means that each one of them is subject. That
order.
Means that each one of them
order.
Is being continuously monitored. Each one of them is being continuously monitored.
Order.
And of course, as I said just earlier, we've criminalised
breaches
of our strict visa conditions. So if anyone who thinks they can get away with those, we will find you and everyone will face the full force of the law.
Order. Order. Members on my left will cease interjecting. The House comes to order. I'll hear from the member for Higgins.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is to the Minister for Education. What is the Albanese Labor Government doing to support workers in the education system and to tackle disruption in Australian schools? And what has been the response?
Give a call to the Minister for Education.
Thanks very much, Mr. Speaker, and can I thank the terrific member for Higgins for her question. Last week I told the House about what the tax cuts mean for teachers. For a teacher on, say, 95 grand a year, that'll mean a tax cut of more than 2,000 bucks. But of course, it's not just teachers who work in our schools. A teacher's aide on 65 grand a year will get a tax cut of more than 1,300 bucks. A school cleaner on 40 grand a year will now get a tax cut of more than 600 bucks. And a school bus driver on 70 grand a year will now get a tax cut of more than 1,400 bucks. Every taxpayer gets a tax cut. That's the point. That's why Australians support it. And that's why, over the last few weeks, the opposition have been behaving like some kind of beginner's Bikram yoga class, all hot and sweaty and desperately trying to contort themselves into a position that we really know they don't want to be in. They hate it, but they're voting for it.
Order.
They hate it, but they're voting for it. Why? Why? Because they know that Australians want Albo's tax cuts. Not only that, they know Australians deserve Albo's tax cuts. And that's what they're going to get on the 1st of July.
Just ask the Minister to refer to all members by the correct title.
Of course I will, Mr. Speaker. They know that Australians want and deserve the Albanese government's tax cuts. Now, Mr Speaker, I'm also asked about disruption in our schools. And there's lots of reasons for that, but one of them is vaping. This is what a principal said in the Australian newspaper on the weekend. Students are fixated on getting their next hit. They're being very disruptive and distracted in learning. We see the behavioural effects from withdrawal as kids disappear from the classroom so they can get their next nicotine hit. One in six kids in high school are vaping at the moment. Wow. One in six. This is a menace in our schools. No wonder parents are worried about it. Now think about this. 9 out of 10 vape stores are within walking distance of our schools. 9 out of 10 vape stores within walking distance of our schools. That's why the Minister for Health is about to bring in legislation into this parliament to ban the sale of these vapes at these stores. And I want to thank the Minister for Health for his leadership in this area. Unbelievably, in that same article on the weekend, the opposition refused to back it. They refused to say that they would support this legislation.
The member for Cowper will cease to object.
Now, on something so important, so serious, that affects our schools, that affects our kids, that affects parents and teachers, I can't believe that the opposition won't support this. Just like they've had a change of heart on tax,
order.
They need to back this
ban
too.
The minister's time has concluded. I give the call to the member for Hughes.
Thank you, Speaker. My question is to the Minister for Immigration, Citizenship and Multicultural Affairs. Minister, does the government know the whereabouts of the 7 murderers and 37 sex offenders?
Good call to the Minister for Multicultural Affairs and Citizenship and Immigration.
Thank you, Speaker, and I thank the member who just asked the question. As I said, although there was a bit of noise a minute ago, all individuals in the cohort, all of those who are required to be released by reason of the court's decision, are being continuously monitored.
Call to the honourable member. Order. Give the call to the honourable member for Blair.
Speaker, my question is to the Minister for Employment and Workplace Relations. What has been the response to the Albanese Labor government's reforms to help workers earn more and keep more of what they earn, including protecting workers from being expected to work when they're not being paid?
Give a call to the Minister for Employment, Workplace Relations and the Minister for the Arts.
Thanks so much, Mr Speaker. And I want to thank the member for Blair, both for his role in this parliament, for the question, but also as one of the members of this parliament who's committed to make sure that people earn more and keep more of what they earn, as opposed to being one of those members of this place who's committed to people working longer for less, because they're in this room as well. They're in this room as well. And it's interesting, as interesting as I hear that those opposite have made their first election commitment now in my area, in my portfolio. And the first commitment wasn't about whether there'd be new forms of bargaining. That wasn't enough to make them angry to make a commitment. The concepts of other legislation that we'd done about bargaining or the Fair Work Commission, none of that got them over the line. What really incensed them was that the principle of people working without being paid anything at all was being overridden. This fundamental principle that some people should be working parts of their weekend for nothing, that was enough to enliven them to have their first election commitment in this area. Well, let's just have a look at one of the sorts of workers in the member for Blair's electorate. Let's consider the impact of the right to disconnect on a constable, level 5, on $96,000 a year. On that, they're looking forward to a tax cut of $2,080. But thanks to an article that's come out today from Ewan Hannon at The Australian, there's some information from what the Police Federation of Australia thinks about the commitment that the Leader of the Opposition has made. Because in their media release, they have specifically addressed the Leader of the Opposition, referring to his call and his first election commitment in industrial relations as being short-sighted, disrespectful and wrong. They go on to explain what happens when officers are sometimes called in the middle of the night for work that could easily wait until their next shift. And that's why in many states, but not yet all, what's the clause that they have in their enterprise agreement? A right to disconnect clause. The Police Federation of Australia is calling on all members of the federal opposition and those who are unsupportive on the crossbench to have a significant rethink on Mr Dutton's position on the right to disconnect, as this will have a significant negative impact for all first responders. And in their words of the Police Federation, Mr Dutton should unwind this ill-conceived thought bubble. They said that their policy would be targeted. It's targeted against frontline workers. It's targeted against pay rises. It's targeted against job security. And it's targeted against people ever getting time away from work
Order.
Where they know their time is their
time
own.
Has concluded. Give the call to the Honourable Member for Kennedy.
Treasurer, doesn't Qatar and Australia export the same amount of gas? Is the Australian Institute correct in asserting Qatar earns $105,000 million? Whilst Australia only 2,300 million. Further, doesn't our tax system result in dinks getting after tax $75,000 per person, whilst a three-child family only $15,000? Wouldn't a gas tax of $25,000 million and income splitting deliver on June 1st a tax return cheque of $25,000 to every Australian family and $2,000 to every pensioner?
Order. The member Kennedy has asked his question. The Treasurer has the call.
Thanks very much, Mr Speaker. Thank you to the member for Kennedy for his question. I want to acknowledge at the outset the enormous contribution that the North West Minerals Province and indeed the great state of Queensland makes to our national economy. Mr Speaker, I think honourable members would be aware that taxation on gas and in the resources sector more broadly attracts a range of views. Typically, they are well motivated. Often, they are well informed. Though I think, in this instance, I say respectfully to the member for Kennedy that that might be part of the tax paid by the industry, but not the whole tax paid by the industry. But all of these things, and the member for North Sydney's question and your question, the member for Kennedy, I think, shows that all of these issues around resource taxation are contested. What is not contested? Is that if our legislation passes the House, we will collect more tax from offshore gas because of the changes in the budget to the PRRT. We will increase tax receipts from offshore LNG by $2.4 billion over the forward estimates. And this will help us fund important priorities like strengthening Medicare or providing cost of living relief to people in your community, his community, or indeed around Australia. Without those changes, we would collect less revenue and it would be, we would be less able to fund cost of living relief for people. I know that the member for Kennedy has a view around income splitting. Our view is that we have found more effective ways to provide relief to the types of families that the member for Kennedy is talking about. For example, our tax changes. Every one of the 71,000 taxpayers in Kennedy will get a tax cut because of our changes. 86% of them will get a bigger tax cut than they would have otherwise. In fact, Mr Speaker, the average income earner in Kennedy will have their tax cut multiplied more than three times by what we are proposing in our changes. And because of those policies, whether it be medicines, tax, support payments, rent assistance and others, we are providing more support to the people of Kennedy. 39,000 people will benefit cheaper medicines in Kennedy alone, almost 5,000 benefiting from income support increases. 4,500 renters get our boost to rent assistance just in Kennedy. And as I said, 86% of taxpayers in his community would be paying more tax were it not for our changes. So I say to the member for Kennedy, I'm grateful for the question. I know there are contested views about tax on resources. What isn't contested is that we are doing something about that, and that is helping to fund important cost of living relief, not just in his community, but in every community represented in this place.
Yeah. We call to the member for McNamara.
Thank you very much, Speaker. My question is to the Minister for Aged Care. How is the Albanese Labor government supporting aged care workers and making sure they can keep more of their hard-earned wages?
Give a call to the Minister for Aged Care and Sport.
I thank the member for McNamara for his question and would like to acknowledge his advocacy for the aged care workers in his electorate, particularly the wonderful workers we visited at Emmy Monash Aged Care in Melbourne. Mr Speaker, the Royal Commission into Aged Care Quality and Safety was a damning report on the quality of aged care in this country, and it spanned five very long volumes. And for the benefit of those opposite, that dynamic cast of characters who have regaled us all in Nemesis. And across 4.5 hours of ruminating, Mr. Speaker, never once passed the subject of the aged care crisis on their watch. Yeah. I will distill that report down to just one word, and that word was neglect.
Mm. Yeah.
The Albanese government, however, understands that the best investment we can make to lift the standard of aged care in Australia is an investment in aged care workers. That's why we delivered an $11.3 billion increase to the minimum award for 250,000 aged care workers. And that's why we've provided fee-free TAFE so people who are passionate about caring for older people can turn that passion into a career and receive a Certificate 3 in individual support for free, saving up to $5,600. It's why we are delivering a tax cut for every single aged care worker. I recently went and met with residents and workers at the MyCare Avon Trust Lodge in Carrum Downs, which is in the electorate of Dunkley. And I went there alongside Jodie Bellier, and we spoke to an aged care worker there named Dawn. Dawn herself is a breast cancer survivor, and Dawn worked in aged care, has worked in aged care for 7 years. Dawn loves her job because she gets to care for older people, including her mother-in-law, who lives in the home that she works at. Good on you, Dawn. But love doesn't pay Dawn's bills, and we know that aged care workers, like Dawn, are facing cost of living pressures. And that is why we are delivering a tax cut for Dawn and for every single one of her colleagues. But while we are delivering dollars for aged care workers, the Coalition are only delivering yet more lip service.
The Minister will pause. We'll hear from the Manager of Opposition Business.
On relevance, Mr. Speaker, a commendably tightly drafted question which allowed no territory at all for the Minister to go where she is now going.
Yes, the Manager is correct. The question was about aged care support. The Minister is entitled to do some compare and contrast, but she's not entitled to do analysis of the opposition's policies, so I'll give her the call and make sure she remains relevant.
I'm talking about the support for aged care workers, Mr. Speaker. I've just talked about how we are supporting aged care workers. I would now make the point that across the summer, one of the members of the Coalition toured aged care facilities and delivered certificates to aged care workers. And I asked Mr. Speaker, did those certificates have in fine print that the Coalition refused to support a pay rise for the aged care workers receiving certificates? Did those certificates state that if the Coalition was still in government, some of those registered nurses would be $10,000 a year worse off than what they are now under the Albanese Labor government? Did the certificates state that the Coalition would not support this tax cut for aged care workers? And then maybe it crossed it out and said, actually, maybe they would support this tax cut for aged care workers. And actually, no, maybe we'll go back and we won't support the tax cut for aged care workers.
The Minister's time and yet maybe has concluded. Order. Yep. We got there in the end. Give the call to the member for Flinders.
Thank you. My question is to the Minister for Immigration, Citizenship and Multicultural Affairs. Can the minister confirm all 7 murderers and 37 sex offenders have been and remain continuously monitored?
Give the call to the Minister for Immigration, Citizenship and Multicultural Affairs.
Thank you, Speaker, and I thank the member for Flinders for her question. As I think I've said on a couple of occasions, every individual required to be released by reason of the High Court decision is subject to at least one of the 4 layers of protection, including the stringent visa conditions which apply to everyone in the cohort.
Give a call to order. Give a call to the honourable member when the House comes to order. Give the call to the honourable member for Pearce.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is to the Minister for Veteran Affairs and Defence Personnel. What is the Albanese Labor Government doing to deliver for defence personnel and veterans, including through Labor's cost of living tax cuts plan?
Give the call to the Minister for Veterans Affairs and the Minister for Defence Personnel.
Well, thank you, Mr. Speaker. I thank the member for Pearce for her question, who has over 3,000 defence personnel and veterans in her electorate. And I know she has close relationships with the 3 RSL sub-branches in her electorate, including being the patron of the Antrim Two Rocks RSL sub-branch. And in her electorate, because I know she cares about cost of living pressures for her veterans, her defence personnel and all of those living in her electorate. 73% of taxpayers in the electorate of Pearce are going to be better off. But just like all Australian taxpayers, the ADF members of our country deserve to keep more of what they earn. Yeah. And we care about that on this side of the House. And almost 87% of Australian Defence Force members will be getting a higher tax cut under the Albanese Better Tax Cut Plan that we are putting forward from the 1st of July. A maritime warfare officer in their first year of warfare training at HMAS Watson will get a tax cut of over $2,000. An Air Force sergeant, avionics technician maintaining Super Hornets at RAF Base Amberley in the member for Blair's electorate will get a tax cut of $2,417. That's because we care about the cost of living pressures that are being borne by Australians, cost of living pressures that are being borne by our Defence Force personnel. And this builds on the improvements that we are making for housing support for serving personnel, access to healthcare, education support, so that our defence people and families are better off. We're also delivering for our serving personnel, veterans and families through DVA as well. The interim report of the Royal Commission into Defence and Veteran Suicide highlighted the 42,000 claim backlog at DVA, saying this was having a seriously detrimental impact on their mental health. Well, as at 31st of January this year, the total number of claims yet to be allocated to a delegate has fallen to less than 3,700. Yeah. Thanks to the Albanese government's increasing resources for DVA, including fulfilling our commitment of 500 additional staff to process those claims, all new initial liability and in-cap claims will now be allocated within 2 weeks, and we'll be clearing the backlog for permanent impairment by the end of the month. This is beating the time limit that was set for us by the Royal Commission. This is because we are committed to improving the lives for Defence Force personnel, veterans and families, and part of that is delivering a better tax cut plan that will benefit serving personnel and all tax-paying veterans. Because we care about cost of living pressure on this side of the House, unlike those on the other side of the House, who are just jumping one way and the other, not being clear with the Australian people, trying to roll back their position and being unclear with how they're going to support Defence Force members, taxpaying veterans and all Australians that are suffering from cost of living pressure and will benefit from our better tax plan.
Oh, order. Give a call to the member for Monash.
Thank you, Speaker. Speaker, my question is to the Treasurer. Treasurer, although it's annoying, there's a reason why banks are asking customers why they want to withdraw cash and what for. A bank manager told me recently a significant number of customers who came in to withdraw cash were being scammed. Recently, in my circle, a couple, sensible couple, was scammed of $100,000 and another friend of mine $40,000. Treasurer, what more can we do to protect the Australian people from this evil?
Call to the Treasurer.
Thanks, Mr. Speaker, and I thank the member for Monash for his question as well, and I commend him for his focus on what is a really important issue, and I acknowledge his efforts on behalf of his constituents for some time now. This is a big focus for the government as well, and for that I want to be up front, Mr. Speaker, and say that I take absolutely no credit for the government's focus on scams, and that's because the work of the Assistant Treasurer in this regard has been absolutely terrific. He has worked tirelessly to tackle and take on this evil in our community and in our economy in a really impressive way. And he's done that in collaboration with the banks. He's done it in collaboration with key institutions. And he's done it with other ministers, including the Minister for Communication and others. And so I pay tribute to him and to his work, Mr. Speaker. It's a huge issue, and I think the hundreds of people who come to his community forums around Australia and all of the people who come through our doors and our elected offices and come up to us in mobile offices too is evidence enough of that. In 2022, Mr. Speaker, Australians lost over $3 billion. To the absolute grubs who try and scam money out of people, often the most vulnerable people, but as the member identifies in his question, not just people that we would traditionally consider to be vulnerable. That's why we're taking decisive action. It's why we have an ambitious agenda here, led, as I said, by the Assistant Treasurer. In last year's budget, we invested $86.5 million in fighting scams and online fraud, $17.6 million for ASIC to bust fake investment websites, $58 million for the ACCC to establish a world-leading national anti-scam centre, and over $10 million for ACMA to establish and enforce an SMS sender ID registry to stop scam texts. And I acknowledge the work of Minister Rowland as well. It's still a big problem, Mr. Speaker, but the crackdown on scams is already showing some signs of success. In the 6 months since the anti-scam centre was created, losses to scams reduced by 29% compared with the same period in 2022. Call disruption technology saved potential victims from major losses, with one consumer saving $300,000. By last week, ASIC had taken down 4,220 investment scam websites, and there are hundreds more in the works. And early data this year shows overall scam losses are around 40% lower than the same period in 2023. The Assistant Treasurer and the Minister for Communications are also working with telcos and digital platforms to see what else can be done in that regard. So, Mr. Speaker, this is a very big focus of the government. There has been some absolutely terrific work by the Assistant Treasurer. It's a very important and welcome question from the member for Monash, and I thank him for it.
Yeah. Give the call to the honourable member for Macon.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and my question is to the Minister for Health. Why are Labor's tax cuts good for healthcare workers and their patients? How will the tax cuts build on the Albanese government's actions to make medicines cheaper? And how is the government ensuring that Australians are able to access affordable medicines after a decade of cuts and neglect?
Call to the Minister for Health and Aged Care.
Oh, thank you, Speaker. I thank the member for Macon, a 10-time national powerlifting champion who represented his country at three separate world championships. And he's represented his community, the north and northeastern suburbs of Adelaide, Mr. Speaker, for almost five decades as a councillor, then a mayor, and now a member in this place. There are 78,000 taxpayers in the electorate of Macon, Mr. Speaker, and on July 1, Labor will deliver every single one of them a tax cut to help with the cost of living. Many of them work in health, including at the terrific Modbury Hospital that celebrated its 50th anniversary only recently, Mr. Speaker. And a third-year nurse working at Modbury will receive a tax cut on July 1 of $1,520, more than double what they would have received under the plan from those officers. A cleaner at Modbury will receive a tax cut of more than $1,000, or four times what they would have received under the plan from those opposite. Hard-working health and hospital workers earning more money and keeping more of what they earn. These bigger, better tax cuts for Middle Australia, Mr. Speaker, build on all of the other cost of living measures that this government has been rolling out, like cheaper medicines. Only last year, in 1 year, Australian patients saved $250 million from our cheaper medicines policies, Mr. Speaker, and they'll save even more this year. In a couple of weeks, around 100 more medicines will be able to be supplied for 60 days at the cost of just a single script, saving patients time as well as much more money. And, Mr. Speaker, the Treasurer's responsible budget management also means that we've been able to list dozens and dozens of new cutting-edge medicines on the PBS. This month, I'm delighted to say that we've listed a new immunotherapy, Optualag, for advanced melanoma. As this year's terrific Australians of the Year, Georgina Long and Richard Scollier, reminded us, Australia tragically has its own national cancer, melanoma. 20,000 Australians diagnosed every single year, and even though survival rates have improved dramatically in recent times, still on every single day, about four Australians lose their lives. Optualag will give new hope to around 1,000 Australian patients every year whose melanoma either is unable to be surgically removed or has become metastatic. And it would usually cost, Mr. Speaker, $315,000 for a course of treatment. From this month, though, it just costs PBS prices. Cheaper medicines, Mr. Speaker, aren't just good for the hip pocket in a cost of living crisis. They also mean that Middle Australia can access the world's best treatment at affordable prices, all part of our commitment, Mr. Speaker, to strengthen Medicare, but also to help with the cost of living.
Give a call to the member for Wannan.
Thanks, Speaker. My question is to the Minister for Immigration.
In Senate estimates last night, it was revealed that on 8 August, 14 September and 12 October last year, the General Counsel of the Department of Home Affairs met staff in the Minister's office to discuss the legal prospects and policy options that led to the release of the 149 hardened criminals into the community. It was further revealed the Minister did not attend any of these meetings. Why?
Order. Give the call. Order. Members on my right will cease interjecting. Call to the Minister for Immigration, Citizenship and Multicultural Affairs.
Thank you, Speaker, and I thank the Shadow Minister for his question. And I say once more, it was the decision of the High Court that required the release of the individuals.
Order.
As Minister and as a member of this government, my number one priority has been doing everything I can to keep the community safe. Now, that continues to be my commitment.
Give a call to the member for Adelaide.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question is to the Minister for Skills. How are Labor's tax cuts supporting more apprentice tradies complete their training while keeping more of what they earn? Why is this support for apprentices so important?
Give the call to the Minister for Skills and Training.
Can I thank the member for Adelaide for his question and his very strong advocacy for apprentices and the vet sector in his electorate and beyond. And it was great to be with the member for Adelaide just before Christmas as we visited a great company in Adelaide, Bianco Construction, where we spoke with apprentices. I think it's we spoke to the apprentice boilermaker Isaiah and the apprentice carpenter Bailey, and they were so proud of the fact that they were undertaking training in an area of demand. They loved their trades, but they were honest too and said, Speaker, that it was very difficult to make ends meet on apprenticeship wages. It's not easy, and we know that. And for that reason, we have to do better as a country to provide support for these apprentices. And at the moment, our apprenticeship completion numbers over the last 10 years has been as low as 55%. 55%. So I'll have more to say about what we're going to do to improve completion rates of apprentices, but we have to do more. But it's also fair to say this government understands the cost of living pressures for across our economy for everyone, including apprentices. And for that reason, this government wants to provide support for all Australians. And that's why we're giving every taxpayer a tax cut from July 1. That's what we're doing. And of course, Speaker, that means we can provide support for apprentices who are on relatively low wages to ensure we do the right thing by them. And like any good policy, most good policy serves more than one aim. It realises more than one ambition. So not only will we be providing cost of living relief for apprentices, will also increase the likelihood for them to connect and stay connected to their training so they can actually finish their apprenticeship and supply the skills to our economy, which is much needed. And for that reason, I very much appreciate the fact that we're going to support these apprentices. And I just would like to inform the House what these apprentices will be receiving from the 1st of July. A first-year apprentice, Sparky, will be getting over $500 from the 1st of July under the Albanese Labor government's tax plans. A third-year adult apprentice plumber will be receiving in excess of $800 under our tax cut plans. Order. A second-year hairdresser apprentice will receive $500. So too a first-year carpenter. And a third-year vet-trained early childhood educator will be receiving $804 from the 1st of July, and so too will the adult Order. Apprentice working in aged care and also a junior boiler-making apprentice will be in receipt of $654. This is very important support for apprentices in this country. It's critical, and if it was left to those opposite, Order. They would not be receiving a cent under those opposite.
Order. The member for Wannon has the call.
Thanks, Speaker. My question is to the Minister of Immigration. The Albanese government has released 149 criminals from immigration detention, including 7 murderers and 37 sex offenders. So far, 18 of these criminals have been charged by state and territory police for new offences. Evidence in estimates has revealed the government has not even applied for a single community safety order to protect the public from these criminals. Minister, how is this possible?
Give a call to the Minister for Immigration, Citizenship and Multicultural Affairs.
Thank you, Speaker, and I thank the Shadow Minister for his question and say once again it was the decision of the High Court that required the release of the individuals, the subject of his question. I remind him again that our top priority has been and remains keeping Australians safe through four layers of protection as well as the wider framework, which of course includes the Community Safety Order and Preventative Detention regime. Now, I'm pleased that members opposite joined us in putting in place this regime before Christmas, and I thank them for their support in the House. I remind them too that our scheme is modelled, as proposed by members opposite, on their own high-risk terror offender scheme. And I remind them too, including the Leader of the Opposition, who was the Minister at the time, that it took more than 3 years, Speaker, for the first continuing detention order application to be lodged under the high-risk terror offender scheme. Now, we are preparing applications and we are making sure, as the evidence of Ms Sharp made clear in the Senate estimates yesterday, that we will do so properly. And as Senator Patterson pointed out back in 2021, and I quote him again, there is a very high legal threshold to be met for a court to agree to the ongoing detention of an offender who continues to pose an unacceptable risk. It's a serious piece of work to be done, and that is why we are taking it seriously to ensure that applications are made properly. And it isn't just Senator Patterson, Speaker, who made this point. Indeed, this morning, a prominent member of the opposition said this. Well, of course, we are all aware there is a high threshold, and we knew that before we put the legislation through the parliament before Christmas. That was the member for Wannon.
Order. 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 Member for Wright will cease interjecting. The member for Groome will also cease interjecting or be warned. So I can order, so I can hear from the member for Fraser.
Thanks. My question is to the Minister for Social Services. How will the Albanese Labor government's proposed tax cuts help working families and complement existing measures in the social services portfolio that have been providing cost of living relief?
Give a call to the Minister for Social Services.
Well, thank you, Speaker. I'd like to thank the member for Fraser for that question and appreciate his advocacy for families in Fraser but right across the country. Now, the Albanese government's number one priority is supporting Australians faced with cost of living pressures. And we know many working families are feeling the pressure, and we as a government are working hard to deliver meaningful relief. On the 1st of July, Labor will deliver a tax cut for every Australian taxpayer. Now, these tax cuts will make a real difference to the 13.6 million Australians right up and down the income ladder. Now, this is good news for Australian workers and families, allowing them to keep more of what they earn. Now, take a dual income family. One parent works full-time, earning $80,000, and the other works part-time, earning $45,000. Under Labor's plan, this family will get a tax cut of $2,483. That is over twice the amount that they would have received under the Morrison's plan. Now, more money in their pocket from Labor's tax cuts comes alongside the extra support we are giving to families through our historic investment in paid parental leave, the biggest since Labor introduced it in 2011. Now, since last year, we've given more families access to the payment, introducing a more generous $350,000 family income limit, and made it much easier for both parents to share care. And from July this year, we're expanding the scheme by an extra 6 weeks, reaching 6 months in 2026, When fully rolled out, that is an extra $5,000 more in the family budget. Now, of course, we have also had targeted cost of living relief to families on the lowest incomes. We've lifted the base rate for working age and student payments, and we've expanded the eligibility of the single parent payment until their youngest child turns 14, up from 8. The latest data shows that this has already helped 77,000 single parents. And at the same time, we're delivering the biggest boost to rent assistance in more than 30 years, which is also helping to moderate rent rises. Now, for families, this complements the government's extra support in delivering relief through electricity bill relief, cheaper childcare, cheaper medicines and investments in bulk billing. Now, Mr Speaker, when it comes to tackling cost of living, we on this side of the House take it seriously. It is clear that those opposite have given up. They've given up when it comes to cost of living. They've abandoned their territory. They never wanted the tax cuts for middle and low-income Australians. They never wanted electricity relief. They never wanted income support. We'll get on with the job.
Time has concluded. Give the call to the member for Wannan.
Thanks, Speaker. My question is to the Minister for Immigration. The Albanese government has released 149 hardcore criminals from immigration detention, including 7 murderers and 37 sex offenders. On 18 November last year, the Minister stated that, quote, ankle bracelets, electronic monitoring, I should say to be clear, is a mandatory requirement under the bill that has come into effect today. That is across everyone in the affected cohort. Can the Minister explain why 36 of the 149 hardcore criminals he released are not wearing their mandatory ankle bracelets?
Give the call to the Minister for Immigration, Citizenship and Multicultural Affairs.
Thank you, Speaker, and I thank the member for Wannan for the question. I presume he is familiar with the provisions of the bill for which he voted for in the House, which required a decision to be made in respect of whether to impose the condition. That decision, as I've outlined in the House, is informed now by the advice of the trusted professionals, including people like Graham Ashton, former Victorian Commissioner and AFP Deputy Commissioner, in terms of managing community safety in determining whether or not a decision is made.
Order. Give the call. Order. Members on my left. The House comes all here for the member for Bruce.
Thank you, Mr Speaker. My question is to the Minister for Home Affairs. The Richardson Review has found extensive misuse of public money in offshore processing under the last government. How is it possible that public money was misused in this way? And who was responsible?
Order. Give the call to the Minister for Home Affairs and the Minister for Cybersecurity.
Speaker, one of the things that makes the member for Bruce's public service so distinctive is this continued focus on integrity, and I really want to thank him for his question. Speaker, yesterday our government released a landmark review report.
Order. Members on my left.
Thank you, Speaker.
Members on my left, the Minister will be given the courtesy of heard in silence.
Thank you, Speaker. Yesterday our government released a landmark report by Dennis Richardson AC, who I think everyone in this chamber would agree is a person of absolutely unimpeachable integrity. Our government commissioned that report in the face of genuine questions being raised about the integrity of contracts in our offshore processing system. Mr Richardson was asked to review the contracts and examine whether any wrongdoing had occurred. And, Speaker, the findings in this report are genuinely extraordinary. What Mr Richardson found was that under the stewardship of the Leader of the Opposition, potentially hundreds of millions of taxpayer dollars were funnelled into companies which were engaging in alleged criminal wrongdoing. Let me say that again, Speaker. This is taxpayer dollars that your constituents and my constituents worked hard for, paid to the government in good faith, and under the Leader of the Opposition, hundreds of millions of dollars of it were put towards companies which are suspected of drug smuggling, arms dealing and money laundering. And we know from Mr Richardson that massive profits were skimmed off these contracts. Now, the member for Bruce asked me how this is possible, and that and other questions about this incredible report are rightly directed to the Leader of the Opposition, because this happened on his watch, Speaker. He set up and oversaw a system that facilated great harms to Australians and to people around the world. Now, Speaker, the questions that the Leader of the Opposition needs to come forward and tell us is what did he know about this and when?
Order.
And why does it appear that after almost a decade in positions of leadership,
order,
he never asked a single question about any of it? It is a reprehensible dereliction of duty. And what makes these questions so critical, Speaker, is what we see, an unbelievable gulf between who the Leader of the Opposition pretends to be and who he really is. This report exposes the Leader of the Opposition as an absolute fraud, someone who oversaw a system funnelling taxpayer dollars into drugs, guns and human trafficking, all while marketing himself as a tough guy on our borders. Now, Speaker, of course this joins the Parkinson Review and the Nixon Review, two reports that showed, for all the tough talk, the Leader of the Opposition drove our migration system into a ditch and walked away, leaving me and the Immigration Minister to clean up his mess. Don't forget, Speaker, he was voted as the worst health minister in living history. He ran a defence department that oversaw years of endless delays. I'm not sure why he clearly can't run a government department. He thinks that he should run our country.
Call to the Prime Minister. Prime Minister has the call.
Ask further questions be placed on the notice paper.